Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network is fueled by Joy. Joy Dog Food has been in business for many decades, since the 1940s. They've never had a recall. They only use 100% American-made products to bring you a dog food formula that is going to keep your hounds on their feet and performing at a high level. Late round bound, the next bear race, the next cat race, whatever you got going, Joy can keep your dog fueled up. I personally feed Joy for this reason. They are not afraid to get in the trenches and get in the fight. They will show up at a local meeting where people are trying to pass tethering laws or breeders' bills or whatever, and put their name on that and put their reputation on the line to support us. So find Joy Dog Food on the internet. Find that dealer locator. Find a dealer near you. Go to joydogfood.com and keep those hounds fueled by Joy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. What you guys are getting ready to hear is an interview with Dan Brayman. Now, Dan is a South Texas houndsman. He's also with Turkeys for Tomorrow. And there has been a lot of uproar and stink and fuss made about these coon killing contests held in the Midwest and other places. And so some of these are sponsored by Turkeys for Tomorrow. We thought we'd, you know, give them a voice as well. Remember, there's two sides to every story. There's ours and, you know, the other side too. And after I'd done the interview, listened to it, set back, you know, I'm on Dan's side here. And so maybe I wasn't as rough or didn't ask the tough questions like some of my listeners think I should have. But, you know, I come at it from a little different point of view than those that are, you know, dismayed by these contests. Where they're having them, our raccoon populations are out of control. As a upland hunter and a turkey hunter. I realize that nest predation is a thing. I've spoken with, you know, biologist Seth Hall. For instance, we did an episode of Houndsman XP a while back where we talked about mesopredators and how humans are on the landscape now and how we've made an abundant food source to where these animals don't cycle of ebbs and flows like they used to. You know, these medium-sized predators in corn country aren't going anywhere, and they only get more and more, and they're not giving the turkeys and ground nesting birds a chance to rebound off of a cold year or you know, a bad nesting season. The one thing I did notice that we did not talk about enough was habitat and how good habitat trumps everything. So yeah, there's some holes to be filled. I do think it was an informative podcast. I ask that everybody listen to it with an open mind because that's important. I also ask that on social media we conduct ourselves like gentlemen and ladies. You know, there's no reason to threaten to kill all the deer or kill all the turkeys or whatever, you know. And I will also say that I had one of these contests just last week right here in my county and surrounding counties. Zero effect on the number of coon streed. We actually hunted one of the farms that was trapped for this contest just last night, and we treed 7 singles in 2 hours. You know, and the dogs didn't even look good. So just keep in mind, it's not as big a deal as it makes out to be. I do wish the optics were better. The giant carcass piles on social media, I don't think is good for anybody. I didn't ask Dan about that as much as I should. That was something that, you know, I think would be a good idea not to put on there, but you know, we don't need to do all that stuff. I don't think, you know, put it all on Facebook for the world to see. That's what Go Wild's for. Check out Go Wild if you want to do tailgate pics and animal pics and stuff like that. But anyway, this is my interview with Dan. I think it went pretty well. It was over the phone. Dan was busy. He was on the ranch. You can hear him opening gates, a few things like that here and there. So stay tuned. Enjoy. If you got any questions, reach out. And like Dan said, he would like to get somebody on the other side of the aisle that disagrees with this. Bring some science, bring a good conversation for us, and maybe we'll all get together. We'll get me and Powell and Dan and someone on there that can, you know, act cordially and disagree cordially, and we can still all be friends when it's over with. That's the main thing. So anyway, here it is with Dan. You guys enjoy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network. And today I'm lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Dan Brayman. And Dan, you are all the way down in Refugio, Texas, is that right?
I am. I'm right down here before you fall off the edge.
Yeah, it's a long ways down there. I'm not going to tell you the bad things that I've said about South Texas on this podcast before.
I probably won't tell you the bad things that I say about it every day.
I spent a year down there. We have a construction company. And we do directional drilling, and we done a job from Kingsville up to Agua Dulce, through Robstown and over to Corpus. And so I got to spend a year in that part of the world, and other than the food, I was not a fan. But I didn't know anybody with bobcat dogs close either.
Well, man, we're not far from Kingsville at all, mate. Less than an hour.
Yeah, I know.
We're right here.
That King Ranch it just eats up the whole area.
It does. Everything you drive by pretty much in every direction for a long ways is King Ranch.
Yeah, and they don't like you on that thing very much.
No, it's not easy to get on there.
No.
Not at all.
No, it's not. But me and you spoke last week. I was down in East Texas preparing for the Super Hunt, and I'd reached out to Turkeys for Tomorrow, and you had called me back, and you know, we got to talking a little bit. I couldn't talk very long. I was actually just sitting down to eat supper, but we kind of said we would get this together. And right. You know, we talked about this last time we spoke, the predator contest that you guys sponsor or host and stuff like that. You know, some of them are going on up here in the Midwest, and some of these coon hunters are just absolutely losing their mind. And so I wanted to just sit you down, talk about that, talk about Turkeys for Tomorrow, and then I was really surprised to find out that you're a houndsman yourself.
I am. I've been running hounds my entire life, running bobcats for 40 years.
And so you
been
got
doing it a long time.
You got running walkers?
I do. My dad was a big coyote hunter back in the 50s and 60s, and my dogs are derivatives from that old bloodline.
Yeah. What got you in? I mean, you've been doing it all your life. I assume your dad got you into it.
He did.
Yeah.
He did, and I think it's just one of those things that if the bug bites you, you can't ever stop.
Yeah. Trust me, I know that's a fact.
You know, you even do it when you don't really feel like doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of get, and I don't know if this is the case with you, Dan, but you get beholden to those dogs in the kennel.
You do.
You know, get to where you're tired, and especially ours, you know. Do you do a lot of night hunting?
We have to in the, spring and summer months, yeah, just because of the heat.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I figured. I mean, you go through a day of work, and you sit down on your nice, easy recliner, and you turn a football game on, and the last thing you want to do is climb out and load them dogs and put them lights on, but you do.
Yeah, but you do.
Yeah.
You do.
So tell me about your dogs. I said they're derivatives from coyote hounds. Was it like your dad's line of dog or something like that?
Well, yeah, it was my dad's line of dog, along with some of his friends. There was some guys down around George, West Texas that had some coyote dogs.
Yeah.
And they kind of, my dad bred some to his, that other man's dogs, and so forth and so on. Then he had a couple of other friends in Mississippi. I think one of the guys' names was L.J. Beasley. I can't remember the other guy's name, but the four of them kind of bred their dogs and trialed them and so forth and so on. And then my dad, of course, ran coyotes on the outside virtually every day for my entire childhood anyway.
Yeah, and when you talk about the outside, I assume you're talking about outside of a pen.
Yeah, no pen.
Yeah. I wonder.
In fact, I've never hunted coyote in a pen in my life.
Do they have like trials in high fence ranches and stuff down there? Because I mean, we don't have any high fence up here, and you go into places in Texas and
they don't really have them in trials in high fence places, but they have like a designated fox pen where
I got you.
Yeah, where it's built specifically for running hounds. I mean, a lot of them don't have any deer or anything else.
Yeah, I know we do have a few of those. They're small though, 20, 40 acres, most of them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's not the same as turning dogs loose and being, 7-8 miles from where you cut them and all that stuff.
Yeah, I know. I've never done it, man. I wouldn't know the first thing about it, but I do know that it's around.
Yeah. What's the hunting like? Because I know bobcats are, they're notoriously hard to tree. We run into them. We got a good bobcat population up here, and we tree a few every year, usually by accident. And there's a few guys. Chris Burrows lives right here, has dogs he specializes with bobcats on, but I mean it's pretty thick where you're at, right?
It's really bad thick. I've never seen anything as thick as here, and I've never had any friends come hunting from anywhere in the country that said they had anything to compare to it. No rocks, all dirt, for the most part all flat country, extremely thick. Everything's got three thorns on it. But, it's probably a terrible place to hunt, but I don't know any better.
Right. Right.
It's the only place I've ever been.
How do you tree bobcats and that stuff? What are you looking for in a dog to even be able to do that?
Well, to me, the most important thing is he's got to run to catch, not run to bark.
Yeah.
If I, excuse me, if I have a pup that's been on two or three cats, and when I get to the catch, he doesn't have his mouth on him, I won't have that puppy anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't need one that's just running to bark because 200 ancestors before him barked.
Right.
I've got to have him trying to get ahead of him and get ahead of the other ones and absolutely kill himself getting there. And we don't tree, but about 40%. We catch about 60% on the ground.
That's what I was getting ready to ask you, because, I mean, you're in that scrub brush and stuff. And I know here, like, bobcats will get – our thickets aren't your thickets. We have some thickets, some multiflora stuff, but they'll get in that, and they'll just stay right in front of a dog and not leave it.
Yeah.
So I assume
– Yeah, and that's what they do here.
Yeah.
And, they'll stop and kind of hunker down, let the dog blow by them, and then sneak out the back and, experience is in a hound is one thing that you can't beat that,
right?
you know, they'll get to where they realize, uh-oh, he stopped. And rather than keep looking out ahead of them, they'll turn around and come right back up their trail and 9 out of 10 times find it. And, you know, that sure helps those young dogs figure out how to do that and get better a lot faster.
Yeah, and you you mentioned running, barking, and catching stuff. Do you want your dogs to open on the ground a lot, or do you want them pretty tight?
No, man, I don't mind them opening. Yeah. I want them to open, but I don't want them to open in the same spot twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you're going to bark, that's fine, but be moving.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the running walkers, at least my dogs, you know, you can watch them on the GPS, and you'll have one or two dogs that are pecking away on a cold trail, and the other four or five dogs are just making 200, 300, 400, 500-yard circles looking.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, one of them will find it, start barking, and then everything will shut up and go to him. And you do that a couple of times, you pretty well got it go.
Yeah. I got to come down and experience. I know Shorty Gorham, he's run some bobcats and stuff down in that part of Texas, and I'm friends with Shorty. He's been trying to get me to go with him here and there, either lion hunting or bob. I need to go down there and experience that, because I want one good experience in South Texas other than the golf courses.
Yeah, man. I mean, you come down here, you can go hunting with us and then go with Shorty, and then you'll get double fistful of it.
There you go. I might have to do that. But what do you raise all your own pups and start your own pups?
I know
we're here to talk about turkeys for tomorrow, but now I'm in the bobcat dog mode, so I'm just going to pick your brain,
man,
a little bit.
I do. I've raised, it's my brother and I, and I've raised my own bunch of dogs for all those years, and he's done the same thing. They're pretty similar. We both have added a little bit of trig hound in a few of them. Mm-hmm. And then we've, you know, very meticulously, you know, and very careful with who, you know, we outcrossed them with when we needed to.
Right.
Have never outcrossed them outside of Texas other than one guy.
Yeah.
We got to know a lot about the dogs before we breed them of ours. But, yeah, we raised them all.
What's the hound hunting culture like down there? You know, because I'm real familiar with East Texas. You know, you get an hour and a half northeast of Houston, and I know everybody there, and I got a camp there that we stay in. I spend a good majority of the winter there. But you get down into South Texas, it ain't like I'm running into dog boxes at gas stations and stuff very often.
If you do, it's hog hunters.
Right.
Every other person here is a hog hunter, and about one out of every 100 are good at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a few cat hunters around. There's a few coyote hunters around. But really, man, for the most part, not that many. Not that many at all.
Yeah. What,
what's that?
What's your bobcat population like? Is it pretty good?
It's good. It's very good. Between my brother and I, we haven't caught less than 300 a year in, God, 30 years, 35 years.
No, 300 a year between two good to hound man.
Yeah,
that's a lot, Dan. that's a lot of bobcats.
And for the most part, that's on the same property too.
Really?
Yeah.
They must just have the best habitat on the planet down there.
Well, it's just, you know, we get so much accolades for our success, but it really isn't what we do; it's where we live.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got a good bobcat population too here, but there's not any dedicated houndsmen to actually see how many there are.
Yeah, right. Well, if you see one, there was a study actually on the King Ranch, and I believe it, that if you see one, there's 25 for every one you see.
Yeah. I don't doubt that a bit. I know I've trapped them in the past when fur prices were good. A good trapper around here will catch 20 to 25 bobcats, you know, if they're just targeting bobcats. But, you know, that's another thing is our bobcat season has only been around for like 15 or 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have all that knowledge, you know, coming into catching bobcats that you guys have that have been doing it for 30.
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to a friend of mine that I used to, lives in southern Illinois. I used to go up coyote hunt with him a couple times a year, every year with his hounds. And back then, you know, I say back then, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find a bobcat there. And he just was talking to me the other night that he's got bobcats running around everywhere.
Yeah, we got, I will see on average now 10 to 15 bobcats a year. And that's not looking. I mean, that's not me going out and looking for bobcats. That's them crossing the road right in front of me where, you know, when a mom in a soccer van would see her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the first one I seen was when I was 19, and now I see them all the time.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's awesome stuff. I was glad whenever we talked and that you were a houndsman too, and you kind of get where I'm coming from, and you're going to understand some of the points that we're making and all that stuff too. But could you just give me a quick introduction on Turkeys for Tomorrow, how that came about, and what your guys' goals are for that organization?
Well, Turkeys for Tomorrow was established a couple of years ago by a few friends that noticed a serious decline in many parts of the U.S. in the turkey population.
Yeah.
And they wanted to all, you know, build a nonprofit organization to try and do whatever research was necessary and whatever common sense told them to try and get to the bottom of the decline and see if they couldn't do something about it. That was literally what it was built on. And fast forward just a little bit of time, and the momentum that Turkeys for Tomorrow has gained is absolutely exponential. I mean, I wasn't there as a founding member, but I do sit on the board now.
Mm-hmm.
And I elected to sit on the board because I joined them just, you know, to do my part to help conservation. And I got a phone call from the founder that day.
Yeah.
Just thanking me for, you know, for joining. And, you know, that meant a lot, man. I wasn't just a number any longer.
Right.
I mean, they appreciated my contribution. And we got to talk and so forth and so on. And another long story short, I ended up on the board of directors. And they've done extensive studies in 5 states, soon to be 6.
What are those states, Dan?
Well, I'm going to not know all of them, but I know it is Iowa, Alabama, Tennessee. I believe there was another one in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the other two.
Okay.
Those were all in place before I came on board.
Okay.
And, some of those studies were geared toward, you know, let's just see what's going on here. They put GPS collars on hens, and I don't have the exact numbers with me right now. I'm out in the pasture, but the poults, first of all, eggs to hatch was barely any, and poult survival was 0.
Yeah.
And they deduced that to, you know, 2 logical points were a mismanagement of habitat and nest predation. And, you know, that's how the sponsorship of that hunt came about.
Right.
You know, we noticed that somebody was going to do that anyway. So we wanted to get on board with it.
Right.
And I told everybody on the board that there was going to be some blowback. There always is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I am of the opinion that it's not like it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, where, you know, a lot of people will say that Mother Nature manages itself. Well, we've not given them the room to do that anymore.
No, we're on the landscape and have changed it so much, especially in the farming, the farm belt.
Absolutely.
Where we've done, you know, you just said you was out in a pasture. Cattle in a pasture make a difference, and they're not going anywhere. Yeah. I love my beef just as much as that as anybody else. Those things are going to stay.
Yeah.
We have to feed. We're not only feeding the United States now, we're feeding the world. And you do that through monocrop agriculture, which is one of the most unnatural things on the planet.
Yeah.
There's no give it back to nature. I think we can go ahead and just lay that to the side.
Yeah, and, you know, I knew there was going to be blowback, and I don't really know what specific questions some of the people that were upset about it have in mind. But I can say that I told the board of Turkeys for Tomorrow that I would like to be the one to answer these questions and to talk with you.
Yeah.
Because I am also a houndsman, and I was a houndsman first.
Right.
We trap extensively where I hunt. My daughter-in-law is a coon hunter. One of my brothers is a coon hunter. I personally have killed 176 coons in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not affected their hunting at all. Now, Texas has more coons than everywhere else, but I mean, everything is relative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the numbers that were posted on what they caught at that event. Yeah, I don't know what the ratio is of what we were talking about earlier, you know, with bobcats or one, and you see one for every 25 you don't see.
Yeah.
But I have to assume that the coon is more.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you some rough numbers. They're actually doing, the MDC is conducting a study in the county just east of me, which I'm on the county line. It's maybe 25 miles from my house. And they're looking at right at 2 coons per acre in places. Most places have at least one.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure on a 40-acre farm, there's a minimum of 40 coons in there.
Right, a minimum.
I think that's conservative.
I do too. Yeah. That was my next statement. I really do. But it is never going to be the TFT's intention to destroy one to save another. That's
right.
Not what we're doing at all. What
right.
we're trying to do is to get people to manage their habitat, which includes their predators,
mm-hmm.
on places where they can. And it doesn't have to be trapping or calling. We don't care if you do it with your hounds.
Yeah.
We just would like to see them managed.
Right. Some of the complaints. First of all, you don't hear this hunt that we're referring to. If people want to look back, this was held in Fayette, Missouri, just right north of Columbia, right north of I-70. That's actually not far from here, a couple hours from my house, a little over. It's where I went to college. I'm real familiar with the area. I do have some hunting buddies down in that area, and it is loaded with raccoons. I mean, it is.
Right.
It's just stacked full. You didn't hear a lot of complaints around Midwesterners where we are overran with raccoons. Most folks like me and numerous other houndsmen understand, especially, and I've got a different point of view because I also love to trap. Anytime fur prices are high here in the north, you're going to see me along the roads in Missouri putting steel on the ground. That's a sport that has been around just as long as houndsmen. It's the sport that opened up the West, you know, and these guys love to trap just as much as we love to turn a dog loose. Just as important for them. And on the bright side of this is these contests give a trapper who is selling 25-cent coon right now an opportunity to do the sport that he loves and make his money back.
Right.
You know, and that's something I don't think anybody looked at during this too. One of the other complaints, and like I said, Midwesterners aren't the ones that are making the biggest fuss. It's the guys in the South, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, places that have a real deep coon hunting heritage, and the places where some of the biggest events in the world are still held, and they don't have the coon population that we have, and they see 900 coons stacked up, and it just blows their mind, and they lose their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there any way, you know, because I know you're on here explaining it the best you can and you're doing a good job of it, but what do we say to those folks that just say that, you know, this is my sport and they're ruining it and this is going to spread to other areas where the coon population isn't as good and it's going to affect my hunting?
Well, I would have to say this. First thing I would have to say is, where does everybody stand on that? I'm not asking if they care or if they don't care. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm asking is, where does everybody stand on, is the wild coon the most likely to be a nest raider and a poult killer out of all of the nest raiders potentially? And if he's not the number one, he's going to be right there at the top.
The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network is proud to partner with Cajun Lights. Cajun Lights can outfit all of your hunting light needs, everything from the high-quality Rogueroo, super bright, super versatile. They've got a Bayou, which is a mid-range price light. And then one of my personal favorites is the Micro Gator. I use that for big game hunting, finding tracks, just general use. If I need a light on my head, I'm grabbing my Micro Gator. I've looked for bear tracks in that thing, lion tracks, cat tracks, coon hunting with it, hog hunting with it at night. I've even used it to work on the plumbing in the house. Super bright, super dependable. Everything that LW sells down there is high quality, and the customer service is second to none. Every week I'm getting notifications that they're adding new items to their store. They've got briar-proof clothing coming out. They got a jacket out right now that's really nice. I put the vest through the paces this last bear season and coon season. Couldn't be happier with that. I can't find anything there that I don't like. And I like dealing with LW Nixon and Cajun Lights. So check them out. You can go to houndsmanxp.com. You can follow that link to Cajun Lights right from our website. Check them out, folks.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be. Okay. So if we establish that, then the next thing I'm going to say is that we are only becoming involved with these kinds of things where we're seeing a decline in turkeys. If there is a decline in turkeys, studies have shown that it's habitat management and predation right now that are the two most likely contributing factors.
Right.
So let's say we go into X County, Georgia. This is just arbitrary name.
Okay.
And talk to the turkey hunters and say, how's it looking here, guys? And they say, man, we are on fire. There's turkeys gobbling everywhere. You're not going to see TFT do anything there. Move over one county and talk to the turkey hunters, and they go, man, we're not seeing but 10% of what we saw 2 years ago. Then TFT is going to start wondering why.
Yeah.
You know, is it because of a drought? Is it because of truly poor habitat management? Or are the predators out of control?
Mm-hmm.
If it's deemed that the predators are out of control, then we're going to try and campaign that people take out more predators so that the turkeys can rebound. But we're not going to assume that it's predators. We're going to go take whatever necessary steps there are to determine what the problem is and attempt to address it. And all of which, every ounce of this will be done with all of the state agencies piggybacked on our back with us. It won't be just TFT out here doing this. It's going to be TFT and others.
And that's going to be one of my follow-up questions there is, because hunters are notorious for never having enough. To a coon hunter, there's never enough coons. To a deer hunter, there's never enough whitetails. To a turkey hunter, there's never enough turkeys, quail, pheasant, you name it, ducks. If we just go into an area and pull the turkey hunters and they know where you're from, I'm going to say, oh, yeah, we don't have enough turkeys. It wouldn't matter if there was 10 in my yard when I said it, you know. Mm-hmm. So you guys do follow-up stuff with, you know, state agencies, biologists, things like that, just to determine, you know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
100% every time. And you know, our message is this, you know, if you own 2 acres, 40 acres, whatever it may be, and it's your private ground and you're not having the success turkey hunting or turkey bird watching, it doesn't matter. If you're not seeing what you used to, then here's some things you can do to your grass and your habitat to make it better. And hey, get a few traps and set them out there. Knock back some of the nestrators a little bit, and let's see if it doesn't change.
Yeah,
you know, we're not that. That is our main message.
And one of the things with that are, like, say I'm going to talk just for Missouri hunting seasons right now. That's where I live. That's where I spend the majority of my time when I'm not in Texas. A lot of the surrounding states, they have year-round coon season, That helps the houndsman. But right now, the houndsman's most difficult hurdle is access to private land. In the north, where their farm ground, our deer are big. A lot of our ground is outfitted, especially our big chunks that we need to run our dogs on. So there's an opportunity there. The problem right now is that our raccoon season falls directly in the middle of the rut and doesn't end until, you know, and doesn't go and goes until January, February or whatever. And so these guys are missing out on a large portion of when they could be taking these nest raiders. And so part of what I've been trying to do with the MDC is lobby for a year-round raccoon season. We do have too many. There's too many coons here. And as a man that spends a vast majority of his time in the woods, I can see that. But in order to help the relationship between deer hunters, turkey hunters, coon hunters, all that stuff, if we had a year-round season, that we could come in there in, you know, February, March, April, June, July, you know, those summer months when you could really knock them down with the hound, there's a possibility that we have access to land that we wouldn't normally have.
I completely agree with you. I couldn't have stated that any better myself. The only other thing that I might add to that is the notion that these landowners and deer hunters have that hounds are going to run the deer off is truly the most asinine statement that I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it is.
And I can't tell you how many times I've been filming an episode with my cat hounds and have a 140 to 150 inch buck standing down a right of way 75 yards from me eating while the dogs are building a fire under a bobcat 75 yards the other direction.
Yep.
That just does not happen. And I know that every houndsman has at one time, whether he cares to admit it or not, run a deer.
Oh, yeah.
And every time
we like ours
that,
too, every now and then.
Yeah. But every time he's done that, that deer runs a circle.
Yeah.
Now, it's pretty dadgum hard to get off of a piece of property running a circle.
Yeah. And I know, actually, even in the slower times of the year up here, early October, late September, when we're in there all night and them deer are coming by in the morning, that may give you that opportunity at that target buck trying to slip back in there after daylight to where he wants to live.
Yeah, well, it's a major outfitting business on the property I hunt cats on.
Mm-hmm.
A huge one. Over 150 deer hunts a year conducted on it. There is no cat season, but that's the best time to run cats.
Right.
And they don't stop us from running cats.
Yeah.
We go cat hunt anytime we want. They coon hunt all night, hog hunt with dogs all night, and they deer hunt in the daytime.
Yep.
And it doesn't bother anything. They killed 187 inch buck out here this year.
Yeah. Nope. You're preaching the choir here.
I would love to come up with something to where, you know, everybody could be more on the same page and realize that it is not our intention to do away with one to save the other.
Yep.
It's not that way at all. But I think the best way to do that, it's just my opinion, I'd like to do this again, Josh, but have a couple of the other side on here where we can talk about it. Not guys that are going to, you know, throw a fit and act a fool, not like that, but where we can literally sit and debate it like grown-ups.
Yeah, and that's the way, there's a reason that podcasts are popular, because me and you can sit down and have a long-form conversation with all the points made, all the discussion made, and we can do it like gentlemen, whether we agree or not.
Yeah, and I absolutely can do that, you know, with whomever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to change my position, but I will try and understand theirs, and hopefully they'll understand some of mine, too.
I think it's you talk about having a gentlemanly discussion, and that's also important for us as houndsmen. You know just as well as I do, Dan, that trappers and houndsmen are the first ones on the chopping block.
Every time.
I mean, we've got all kinds of sportsmen in this United States, and there's all kind of outdoor activities that everybody enjoys. But we all have common enemies and anti-hunters and things like that, and there's no sense in fighting amongst ourselves about stuff. And there's also yeah, we're going to disagree on things, but we need to go about it in a different way, as opposed to saying you're going to do this or do that on social media and, you know, all that stuff. And then you hear, you hear guys talk about, oh, that ought to be illegal. They ought to outlaw that. Well, you know what? A hunting competition outlaw would literally kill our business.
Yes.
It would kill it. I mean, that would be the end of competition coon hunting.
Yeah, and there's absolutely nothing. I've never done it myself, but I would like to go watch it one time. Competition coon hunt. I've never done it.
Yep.
But there's no reason to kill it. And you're not going to kill it. All you're going to do is force people to do things illegally.
Right. And, you know, it's a deal where if they start at these large predator calling events, what's the difference? What's to keep them from going a step farther and a step farther and a step farther until all of a sudden nobody's calling coyotes, nobody's turning a dog loose?
You're absolutely right. And I've said that for a very long time on every platform that I've ever had. And that is, it's very hard for us to seem like a formidable adversary to the other side that's trying to do away with our traditions when we can't even get along ourselves.
Exactly. I always say we just leave that to the deer hunters. They can gripe amongst each other.
Well, even them, they just need to get on board too.
Yeah, I agree. And we're lucky. All of us. And I've preached this before on this very podcast, is right now, probably 40 to 50% of the land that I hunt, and I have a lot of access, 40 to 50% of the land that I'm allowed on is outfitted land. It's a place where we have a really good working relationship with the deer hunters. A lot of them, you know, were hesitant at first, but, you know, once they met us and we did things the right way and we done all this stuff, pretty soon we've got access to more acres than we could ever hunt. And there's a path there, but we got to kind of keep our minds, you know, from going the other way and being, you know, just for better, pardon my French, but being an asshole. Quit being an asshole on social media and maybe it'll help.
It will. It will. You know, I've always also said that, you know, one of the common arguments that, you know, the people that are against hunting in general have against us is they call us, you know, stupid and rednecks. Yeah. Well, I can assure you, sir, that I am a redneck, about as redneck can get. But the reason they call us stupid is because a lot of us behave that way.
Right.
You know, with being a keyboard warrior and making idle threats from 3,000 miles away, you know, next time I see you, I'm going to do this, and knowing damn well they're never going to see you, it's ridiculous. And I think that, you know, there needs to be a coalition of us, and it can start with houndsmen and then go out into all branches of the outdoor industry, to where we all speak the same voice with the same language, because we need to all get along.
Yeah, I mean, we are a powerful force if we're combined. But we also have the ability of really murdering each other.
Yeah, we're doing a hell of a good job at that right now.
Yeah. I think every time I think it's getting better, there's a little small hiccup. I think right now we're two steps forward and one step back. It's getting better as people get used to all these platforms. You know, when you look at all the social media platforms and podcasting and YouTube channels and things like that, I think we're getting closer. When you got guys like me and yourself talking on this podcast, you got the Meat Eater crew talking about hound hunting on their YouTube channel and their podcast and stuff. I mean, it's getting better. But like I said,
there's no doubt about it.
There's still some bumps in the road.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get it. Hopefully it'll all get lined out, but I would dearly love to, you know, have a little discussion on your podcast with some of these guys that are, you know, against what we're doing. And I can't speak about anything, honestly, other than my own personal experience. But I can categorically tell you that the amount of coons trapped on this property is astronomical. And my brother and my daughter-in-law catch one or two coons every single night they go hunting.
Yeah. No, we've had contests here in the past. And, you know, it was just 2013 the last time we had a really good fur market. And we trapped over 300 coons just right here. And then they were all back in the spring. And then once that got over with and they got knocked down just a little bit, they came back with a vengeance with no trappers and no fur market and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, they They need to be controlled, and that's one of the reasons I don't think people understand about this last hunt that got spread around on social media and where it was held and how, as a guy that's trapped and a guy that's coon hunted in North Missouri all his life, I know how all these animals were caught. I don't even have to ask. Most of these animals were caught along busy roads and dog proofs. I mean, they just were.
Yeah.
They had to be.
You can't
bring 160 coons in one team without laying a bunch of steel on the ground.
No.
And that's not areas that we turn a dog loose.
No, probably not. No. And I don't know how easy it is up there to get permission to go trap for coons, but down here you can't hardly do it at all.
Well, see, up here, MDC does a fantastic job of making sure hunters have access to their public lands and all that stuff. But it's perfectly legal with zero permission to trap along the road.
Okay.
You don't have to ask a landowner. Even if it's a navigable creek, you can walk up the creek as long as you don't leave it and set your traps.
Okay. Yeah. Here you can't do that.
Right. And see, I know Texas private property laws are way different than North Missouri's, but, you know, here access is not a problem. And where they're taking these coons is not where, you know, when I trap, I don't trap right where I coon hunt because it's not efficient. I can drive down the road and set a trap every half mile at every little ditch, creek, whatever, and set a lot more traps and catch a lot more coons.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it doesn't, it's kind of counterintuitive to trap where you're going to be running your hound.
Well, I mean, and we shoot a lot of coons out to our hounds. I like giving coons to young dogs. I think it's important. I like an old dog that likes coons. That gives it a reward benefit, you know, at a tree where I don't have to just pet it up and get it all wound up on that tree where it's going to miss on the next one.
Right.
You know, when they do good, they get coon in their mouth. When they don't do good, they get sent on.
That's right.
So, I mean, we shoot a bunch. And there's plenty to go around up here. You need to get up here and see it for yourself one of these days.
I liked it. That'd be fun. I have never once in my life let a bobcat go.
Really?
Never.
No kidding. There's something about you Texans. You're just absolute homebodies. They're the same way down there in East Texas. They won't even leave Leon County. All my buddies won't.
No, I mean, I've never let a bobcat live.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I got you. Well, that's good. And you're still killing the heck out of them.
So, I've had some get away.
Yeah.
Make my dogs look like idiots and going about their merry way, but I've never just walked away from one, you know, in a tree and let him live.
Right. And I just sold a 7-year-old dog that I said he's never treed the same coon twice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the way I like to do it, and that's the way a lot of folks like to do it, especially the guys that are winning big, and we still got them to go around. Now, in other people's defense, there are places where they don't have that population and that habitat. But like you said, that's not something that Turkeys for Tomorrow is looking into getting into anyway, a place like that.
No. You know, our focus, Turkeys for Tomorrow specifically, focus is to try and reestablish the flocks of turkeys where turkeys are struggling.
Right.
You know, there is a lot of places where they're struggling. But there's also a lot of places where they're not.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is never going to be Turkeys for Tomorrow's intention to completely do away with A just to save B.
Right.
We just want to find a balance.
Nope. I get it, Dan. If there's anything else you got to add, feel free to add it. I appreciate you sitting down with me. It was just nice to hear from another houndsman, even though you do live in the armpit of the world.
I do. If you get a chance, get on Facebook on Mellon Ranch Hounds.
Okay.
And look at the cover picture. It's a bunch of cats on the side of a barn. That was 31 days of hunting brother and I.
I will definitely check that out. Let people know how to find you, Dan. Now, you got an outfitting business too, I believe?
I do. It's Mellon Creek Outfitters. Also, there's a website. You know, obviously it's on Instagram and Facebook and all of that as well. But the hound page is Mellon Ranch Hounds, and that's Mellon with one L.
Great. Everybody can go take a look at that, and maybe they want to come down there and go on a guided bobcat hunt with you one of these days.
my man, we can do it. And you need to come down here and just come watch, crawl around in this thorn-infested hell and experience it, as you say.
I'll do that. I like seeing good dog work. I don't care where it's at or what terrain it's in. I do enjoy good dog
Sounds
work.
Good. Well, I really appreciate you having me, man. I enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, and we will, maybe in the future, we'll line something up where we have a dissident. And, you know, they can come, and I'll give them time to get their facts and their science and all that stuff together. And, you know, we'll all three sit down and have a good gentlemanly discussion like good houndsmen do.
I really would like that. I think it'd be really beneficial, man.
I do, too. Well, I appreciate you, Dan. And if you need anything else from myself or Houndsman XP, you just feel free to reach out.
I will. I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me.
You bet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week's The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network. We thank you for listening.